Get me screw on head. There are two histories, one that is told and one that isn't. I, Abraham Lincoln, do order that America's strangest, most secret histories will only be recorded in one book. These are the adventures of the amazing screw on head.
Well, the way they pick TV shows is they make one show. That show's called a pilot. Then they show that one show to the people who pick shows. And on the strength of that one show, they decide if they want to make more shows. Some get chosen and become television programs. Some don't. Become nothing.
Welcome to Drop the Pilot, a podcast dedicated to TV pilots that became nothing. I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Martin. Today, get out of here, wife. I'm self-conscious now. I've got to read lines.
Read them, bitch. Do your sexy voice. Are you podcasting now?
Yeah.
Wait, I was going to start dinner.
We'll start dinner then.
But I'll be clattering about.
No, you won't.
You just starting now?
Yeah.
Oh, hello, Jimmy.
Hi.
He says hi.
Hi. Okay, let's go do mac and cheese. But no, you're going to take a bit. You'll be like, what, you'll be doing this for about an hour? Let's go watch the TV then.
Put it on, it'll be fine. Okay. And I'm Martin. Today we are discussing The Amazing Screw-On Head, which debuted online on the Sci-Fi Channel website on July 12, 2006, and then on DVD on February 6, 2007, after it was not picked up to series.
It was written by Brian Fuller, who created shows such as Pushing Daisies and Hannibal, and was last seen on the podcast writing The Abysmal Mockingbird Lane. That was terrible. It was directed by Chris Prynoski, who is an animation guy. He's directed stuff that I've never heard of, such as Happy Monster Band and Motor City. So, Martin, what did you think of The Amazing Screw-On Head?
I was really sceptical of the premise of it. You know, it was a bit twee with the head that screwed on and everything. I wasn't particularly taken by the main character, but everything around it I liked, even if it was essentially Hellboy.
Yeah, well, obviously it's from Mike Mignola, who wrote Hellboy, and this was actually originally a one-off comic, which I read last night. And the comic is more sort of... The comic takes itself more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously more sort of comedic. And apparently Mike Mignola didn't actually like this pilot because he thought it was too wacky.
So did you like the comic more?
I think I did, yes.
And did you like the pilot?
I didn't... Right, okay. Well, you didn't answer if you liked it or not. But anyway, I didn't...
And that's why you should vote for me. You know what?
What?
Jimmy says to me, okay, I got an idea for a podcast where we talk about the pilots to shows that didn't get picked up.
I pronounced a D, thank you very much.
And I said, that's a ridiculous concept. No one's going to listen if they aren't familiar with the pilot, which they won't because it didn't get picked up. You'll never build an audience. Don't waste your time.
Yes, and you were right, but still...
Well, yes, he didn't need to swear at me so much. But well, at the same time, I was like, "That this could be a really cool way to find some really quirky bits of TV that we'd never otherwise see."
Mm-hmm.
And then we watched that bloody stupid space sitcom directed by Commander Riker with the woman with the wings, mm-hmm, and the, you know, god-awful time travellers who are just like other time travellers and totally forgettable.
Yeah.
And this is the first one where I was just like, that was a really good bit of TV. I really enjoyed it. I can kind of understand why they didn't go with it, but I appreciate, you know, that there was something going on there.
Yeah, I do appreciate the fact that they tried. I appreciate that they took this weird concept and the weird drawings and stuff and character design and tried to make it into something coherent. But I think it translates better as still pictures than animation. I don't think Mike Mignola's art sort of lends itself to being animated personally.
I've not actually watched them, but there are a couple of Hellboy animated films in this style.
Yeah, and I would say the same about them. I've seen one of those.
I've actually got the first Hellboy trade paperback, which I picked up about 10 years ago, and I've still not actually read.
Yeah, it does. I don't know why. Hellboy's never really appealed to me. I like the movies, apart from last year's one, which was atrocious. But I like the Guillermo del Toro ones. The premise, the idea of it in comic book form just doesn't really appeal, so...
I'm so disgruntled that we're not going to get Hellboy 3.
Yeah.
Like, because it really felt like they were building towards something that we're never gonna see.
Yeah, and then they go and make the one they made last year that just retold his story again.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
It's on Netflix.
I'm probably not going to watch it. Although I think part of it was shot in Bristol.
Yeah, I think it was shot in the UK, yeah. So, there you go.
Hey, Jimmy, can you read out the plot of the pilot and we'll talk about it as we go?
Yeah, what a novel idea, Martin. I should do that for every episode. At the Museum of Dangerous Books and Papers in 1862, a professor is captured by two elderly ladies, one of which is a werewolf, and their companion is a monkey wearing a crown.
I have never been on board with a pilot so quickly.
Yeah, I did like this opening scene. I thought it was very well... Yeah, it was just like, what the f*** is going on here? So, yeah. President Lincoln tasks the amazing screw on head to find the professor and to discover just what his captor Emperor Zombie is up to. The amazing screw on head is a head that has numerous robot bodies that he can screw into. He is aided by his manservant Mr. Groin and a dead stuffed dog called Mr. Dog.
And this is from 2006, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Around the time Paul Giamatti was one of the biggest actors on the planet.
Yeah, that's right. We've only spoken about who... Paul Giamatti is Screw on Head. And... Yeah. You didn't really like the main character, did you? What did you think of his voice performance, though?
Like, I don't have a problem with the character himself. Mm-hmm. But... the concept was sort of like... And, like, you get this a bit with Hellboy, where you have, like, different types of weird, and some of it skews left, and some of it skews right. And I don't know how well this fit in with the rest of the setting. But, like, the way the character's actually played as being just completely aristocratic, I loved. There's some very funny bits with the... you know, the manservant, and like, don't be so over-familiar, and...
Yeah. Do I hear
yeah.
a cat?
Special guest appearance.
Yay! The cat whose name I can't pronounce the name of.
Perd.
There, I can. And what is Perd up to just now?
He's just had his dinner. I think he probably wants more.
Alright. Well, my cat is lying sleeping just now, so... and my dog, and my other cat, but they're downstairs. Anyway. So, President Lincoln, I did like the way that they did President Lincoln talking to the screw on head. It's like a big poster of President Lincoln, but his mouth moves like a shutter type thing. It's
kind of like a steampunk take on the Thunderbirds.
Yeah, it's mechanical and it moves the mouth and the eyes.
Thunderbirds have like the picture frame and then it pulls back and it's a video phone.
Yes. Which this makes sense because of the time period it's set in.
Yes.
In the comic, it doesn't move at all. It's just a static picture of the president he's talking to. So this makes more sense to me. I don't know how they could have shown this in comic book form, obviously, but so this is one area where that actually the animation lends better than the comic does. Right, so in Marrakesh, at the lair of an informant, Patience, a vampire, kills the mummy-looking dude with her army of rats.
So much happens so quickly.
I know, and that is one sentence I never thought I would ever say in my entire life, but here we go. I just said it. Well, one rat sets fire to him, and that's it. Screw-on-head arrives, reminisces about the time when she was human and he was still a head, but they were in love. She was captured by Emperor Zombie and turned into a vampire. Yeah, this entire scene, it's just like all this exposition. It's like, this is Patience. She's a vampire. This is how she became a vampire. She has an army of rats. And, you know, it's a lot to take in.
It is.
I mean, it's good, but it's a lot to take in. And this is another area where it differs from the comic, because because the comic's only like 40 pages long, the screw-on-head story, they don't have a relationship in the comic. She's just a minion, so there's no backstory there. He manages to capture Patience.
This does feel very much like the Universal monsters all coming together.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a zombie and a vampire and a werewolf, a monkey. Yeah. Mm. Zombie kills the professor by turning him into smoke and then smoking him, therefore having all of his knowledge. That's one way of doing it, I suppose. So the professor's dead. Head tortures Patience with sunlight until he is stopped by President Lincoln, who tells him that this is personal for Head. I'm just going to call him Head because that's fun. We learn that Zombie was once Head's
that
man.
That sounds like oral sex.
It does, yes. That's why I'm saying it. We learn that Zombie was once Head's manservant, who has killed all of the manservants after him. This has led to Head not being able to trust or to get close to Groin because he fears he'll lose him. And this is different to the comic as well, because Zombie's not a former manservant.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing they do quite a lot in adaptations, is like, quick, let's force a relationship between the hero and the villain as a sort of shorthand. Like, let's say the villain was the hero's adoptive brother.
All right, yeah.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah. I must take a drink, so either be silent or keep talking.
I am, of course, referencing Spectre, where the villain Blofeld is revealed to be the stepbrother of James Bond, because that was the problem with Thunderball, clearly.
Yeah. That makes absolutely no... But that makes sense, but to have it happen doesn't make sense.
It was a waste of a good Christoph Waltz.
It absolutely was, yes. Mm. Somewhere on the Mississippi River...
Where?
Mississippi.
Mississippi?
Mississippi.
Mrs. Zippy?
Yes, Mrs. Zippy from
From Rainbow.
Yeah. Zombie says an incantation that opens an ancient door, and he and his minions go down to the temple of Gung. And there's a bit where I don't know if it's actually supposed to be a statue or if it's actually like Gung himself, but he's holding a box and he says, "Foolish mortals," and Zombie says, "Do I look mortal to you?" And he shoots the box out of his hands. That's in the comic.
That bit was very good.
Yes.
And we should probably talk about Niles.
Right. So, who does the voice of Emperor Zombie then?
Niles.
Niles. Who's Niles?
Fraser's brother.
Yes. And what is his real name?
Niles Crane. David Hyde Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
Who also voiced Abe Sapien in the first Hellboy.
He did, yes. And so this is his second foray into the world of Mike Mignola.
Like, part of me was just like, oh, they've just gotten him to do his usual shtick. But then I was like, that's brilliant. I just love the bit where he nicks something. He's just like, mine now.
Yeah. It's actually patience. Mm-hmm. it's when his vampire bat takes patience and bites her, and then he carries her away and just says, mine now. Yeah, it's really good.
He is by far the best thing in this.
Yes. I do like the monkey wearing the crown, but Emperor Zombie is the best talking character, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because where else are you going to see a monkey wearing a crown? And also, I think he's called Mickey. Mickey the Monkey, I think he's called.
That's
funny. That's actually a character in, I think it was Topper comic when I was growing up. Mickey the Monkey. Anyway. Zombie wants to summon a demigod and destroy the world. He finds the treasure, which is a turnip that has a parallel universe trapped inside it. Head arrives with patience in a cage, but the demon is loose. And in the comic... Did you read the comic, by the way?
No.
No, right. In the comic, this is completely different because the... Well, it's the same, but the demigod is released accidentally. And Zombie doesn't actually want it to destroy the world. So he escapes. He runs away. So it's different in the comic. The creature destroys Head's body, but he manages to summon Groin and Dog. Zombie pledges his allegiance to the demigod and offers to make him an army of the undead. Mr. Dog arrives but is crushed by the creature. But this is just a distraction, as Groin is taking Head's head while Zombie... Head's head, yes. While Zombie is talking, Mr. Groin presses a button and a mechanical spider-like body crashes through the wall and hits the demigod. Groin throws Head, who lands in the spider body and attaches himself. He stabs Zombie and throws him out of the temple. Well, sort of to the side. So what did you think of this scene? Were you fully in by this point? Were you really enjoying it?
Yes. It was good. No, I really liked the interplay between Zombie and Head, and and isn't this the bit where it's revealed that he is the former manservant, and you get a bit of the other manservant sort of getting a bit jealous. I thought that was all a lot of fun, and I like the sort of it's a very Saturday morning cartoon thing where you have a recurring villain and the hero, and then you'll have another villain of the week that they're both sort of going up against, which sort of reminded me of, stuff you watch as a kid, but you don't see that as much, where you have like two villains who aren't like on the same team.
That's true. The demigod gets defeated by getting punched a lot and then sent back into the turnip. The temple collapses, trapping Head, who is now detached, underwater. The spider body traps Zombie and drops underwater with him. On land, Mr. Groin and Dog see Zombie's minions get away, and Gung returns Head's head. Head accepts Groin as his friend. Patient captures Dog and takes him away. And this happened to... This with the, an anchor or something? It grabs onto Dog and then swipes him away. That happens to that happens to Head in the comic, and Head defeats Zombie on the balloon in the comic. So, at the White House, Lincoln thanks Head, Gunk is given a job, and Lincoln signs a Homestead Act. The end. Don't know what happened to Dog. But
apparently, according to contemporary reports, Lincoln actually had a much higher voice than he's often portrayed as.
Yeah?
Yeah, but there are no recordings.
No.
Apart from that time he was on Star Trek.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah, that's historically accurate. So that's, yeah. Should always believe Star Trek.
Yes, unless it's Voyager. Never believe Voyager.
Well, just do what I do and just forget it exists.
But then how do you explain Picard?
Well, we can always just say that you don't need to... I mean, do you actually need to know what happened in Voyager to know what's happening in Picard? Is it not just like there's characters from Voyager? It could, then you could just say, well, that's just someone he knows.
Yes, that works.
Yes. You don't need to know who the person is. I haven't watched Picard yet.
It's very good.
I'm waiting for it to end and then I'm going to binge it.
Sensible.
Right, so do you have anything else to talk about in this pilot, Martin?
I like the style of it. I like the steampunkness of it. I like the quirkiness of it. I think if it had been a few years later, it could be something that ran for 10 seasons and we all talk about how we hate stupid popular programs like The Amazing Screw on Head.
Yeah.
You know, you look at things like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and the Adult Swim stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really could see this sort of thing getting that audience and a bit of a, you know, a bit of a web following, and you know, it could have gone completely different. And you know, the voice cast is really good, and you know, they had Paul Giamatti, like he sort of was in like really serious, you know, films.
Yeah.
And then like it was a, you know, everyone was really surprised when he did John Dies at the end.
Mm-hmm. He also did Shoot 'Em Up as well. That was a wacky romp.
Yeah.
The bad guy in that. That was a ridiculous over-the-top action movie.
I never actually saw that.
Yeah, no, the voice cast are really good. And we failed to mention that Patton Oswalt is the voice of Mr. Groin.
Yes.
So this is the second pilot, Martin, that we've covered that has Patton Oswalt in it. So there we go.
And a much better one.
Yeah.
He was in that comic book nerd pilot that we hated because it was terrible.
Super Nerds.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible. And the other ones you mentioned earlier were Star Patrol and... what was the second one you mentioned? Not the name,
Time
but...
Time Cop.
What?
Time Cop?
No. Not Time Cop, that's Jean-Claude Van Damme. Which is actually quite a fun movie. Anyway...
I'm always completely thrown by the fact that the baddie is Juno Brunelli from Bruno Gin. I'm always really thrown that the bad guy in that is Juno. I'm always really thrown by the baddie is Bruno Gianelli from The West Wing.
Yes. No, that was Heat Vision and Jack. That Ron Silver was the bad guy in. He played himself.
No, he's the bad guy in the movie Time Cop.
Oh, in Time Cop. Yeah, so he was. He was also... Well, there you go. It brings it around because he was also on Heat Vision and Jack.
Exactly. I love how at the end of Time Cop, the girl Time Cop had mentioned the... guy she fancied in high school, and then at the end in the new timeline she doesn't know who Jean-Claude Van Damme is, much like kids today, and he's just like hey, maybe he's still out there, and she's just like, you what?
Yeah.
T- Time Cop is one of those movies that I remember as being quite a fun movie, but if I were to actually stick it on going, oh, that was quite fun, would instantly find it a bit, no, it doesn't hold up.
No, I disagree. It is awesome. And I will defend Time Cop to the day I die. I have it in Blu-ray. No one will say anything bad about Time Cop while I'm alive. When I'm dead, say whatever you want. But as I'm alive, Time Cop is a fun movie. It's one of Jean-Claude Van Damme's best, damn it!
Join us next week on Drop the Pilot for a memorial on Jimmy and a slagging off of Time Cop.
Yeah. And then also, like, news footage of you getting arrested for murdering me. Just so you can... just so badmouth Time Cop.
I was actually referring to your cough.
Yes, I know. I know. But I just thought it'd be funnier if you murdered me. You could badmouth Time Cop.
God, that's how dire the situation is. Oh no, murder would be funnier. Let's go with that.
Yes! It's more preferable than me dying of coronavirus.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
I only have a cold. I'm fine, I promise. I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine. It's just a cold. I have an itch, a tickly throat, and I cough occasionally. And my throat's a little bit sore, but it's fine. I don't have any other symptoms. No headaches, no tricky breathing or anything. I'm good. I am not dying of the coronavirus. This will be the last episode. Oh dear. Oh, and I forgot to mention that this is actually week three. We've actually made it to week number three, Martin, of a theme month on Drop the Pilot.
Hooray!
This is comic book month. So, yay!
So why didn't you like it?
It's not that I didn't like it, it's just that I preferred the comic because the comic took itself more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I found that more amusing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I can see that.
Whereas this was just like, I mean, I did like it. I did appreciate it. I love the voice cast and some of the humour was quite amusing and I did laugh a couple of times. So that's always good. So I can't say that I didn't like it. I just preferred the comic, which was only 40 pages long or something, so that was fine. I don't know why he only ever wrote the one screw-on-head story.
Yeah, very odd.
Yeah. Anyway, that is all we have time for. I'd like to thank Martin for joining me to talk about a pilot he actually liked.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Yes, you can retire now from Drop the Pilot, Martin. I'd rather you wouldn't retire, but you could if you wanted to, because you've done it.
I might end up watching that other one now to see if I would have liked that one more or not.
Or the Crystal Cube?
No, the other...
Oh, the Welcome to Eltingville or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
So what made you decide not to watch that and watch this instead? Why did you change your mind?
I thought that was live action and then I realised it wasn't.
Right, but did you know that this was also... animated?
Yeah.
Right. So what's the difference in watching one animated pilot and not another animated pilot?
It's what I was in the mood for at the time.
What, an animated pilot or this particular animated pilot?
This one.
Right.
Because of the Mike Minolta of it all.
Minola?
That's what I said.
No, it isn't. It isn't, and you know it isn't. Don't lie to me, Mr. Lejeune. If that is indeed your real name.
Well, it's not quite as wobbly as that, but more or less.
I think this might have been better if it was, say, created for the Adult Swim.
Yeah.
If it was maybe a couple of years later and on Adult Swim, I think it may have taken off a little bit better than it did.
Mm.
Sci-Fi Channel probably isn't the best place for this. Adult Swim's probably... more at speed, but hey-ho, hindsight and all that. Anyway, if you'd like to follow the podcast at Drop the Pilot Pod, Facebook, Twitter, and if you want to drop us an email, droppthepilotpod@gmail.com. Where can the listeners find you on the internet there, Martin?
On Twitter at TheFaldor.
Excellent. Like to thank you all for listening, and I'll speak to you all next time. Goodbye.
Bye.